Hey y'all, this is Sam.
And this is Steven.
And this is Crimology. This is episode 29, which means next week is going to be our season finale. And then we decided that we're going to take 2 weeks off, and then we'll be back with season two. Not really a whole lot's going to change in season two. You'll just see little difference in musics and layouts of how we do our episodes, different segments, little changes that we've made. And we'll be back and better than ever. But yeah, episode 29. So at this point, we're talking about Brandon Lawson. And at this point is normally when I'm like, this is how I found this case. I don't really have a cool, I don't know where I got this case from. I don't know where I came across it. It may have been something that I did like a random Google search and found him. But when we did a poll on our Instagram asking people like what kind of, you know, this kind of case versus that kind of case and what kind of case do you guys like to listen to? Because we try to do a different type of case each week. And there were quite a few people who said that they liked hearing missing people's cases. First off, so that we can get their story out, and possibly getting information for the families, but just exposure for a missing person case is helpful anyways. But then also some people even said that it makes them feel better when they're able to kind of think that they just went off to go make this other life for themselves and like to think of that nothing bad happened to them, if that makes sense. So this is one of those stories where unfortunately we don't have an ending to this story and it's an open case. So for the people who like to create happy endings, which we hope this story does, this is a case where you can do that. So Brandon Lawson was 26 years old when he went missing on August 8th, 2013 in San Angelo, Texas. Brandon goes home where he lived with his girlfriend, Ledessa. Soon after he gets home, the two of them get into an argument. Brandon didn't come home the night before, and Ledessa thought he was using drugs again. Now, I say again, because Brandon did have a substance abuse issue, but at this time, he told people that he was 6 months sober. However, Kyle, who is Brandon's brother, said that Brandon was using meth the night that he disappeared. So around 11:30 p.m., Brandon calls his dad, who lives in Crowley, Texas, and tells him he's coming to see him. Now, obviously, depending on where Brandon lives and where his dad lives, this trip could have been like a 4-hour trip. So I get it that you just got in a fight with your girlfriend, but weird time to decide to make this kind of drive at 11:30 p.m. It must have been like a pretty major fight. But he pulls out of his house about 11:54 and his silver Ford F-150 and is determined that he's going to make this trip. Around 12:30 a.m., Brandon calls his brother Kyle and tells him that he's out of gas and he's pulled over on the side of the highway. Also during this call, Kyle says that Brandon said there were three, quotes, Mexicans in the neighborhood who were chasing him out of town. So Kyle, knowing that Brandon is on meth, asked if Brandon was just hallucinating, where Brandon said no. So at this point, Kyle, his wife, and their 4-year-old drive to Ledessa's to get a gas can and then head towards Brandon's house. Kyle said during this time that he was driving around to get everything, he would call Brandon frequently, but Brandon wouldn't hold a conversation with him, basically only saying a few sentences and then ending the phone call. Around 12:50 a.m., Brandon calls police. He tells them he's out of gas and he needs the police. Now, trying to hear what he says on these phone calls is hard. His words all seem to connect with each other. So you get bits and pieces of what he's trying to say. And there's YouTube videos out there, and I'll link one in Facebook that you can go try to listen to. But it's just all, he's also got a low voice, so that doesn't help. So it's just hard to hear. But he does mention running into someone on both sides. Again, you don't know what that means. But he tells dispatch that he's run into somebody on both sides. So it's possible that there could have been people who were running him out of town, like he said. But we're not sure. So some say that he asked for an ambulance. So there was, and as soon as dispatch asked, do you need an ambulance? Like, what's going on? He basically doesn't answer after that. And the call just kind of runs. And that's where this clip of this audio ends. So that's pretty much all we have to work with. Around 12:50 a.m. to like 1:15 a.m., Brandon receives and makes several calls to his brother, his girlfriend, his neighbor, and the 911 dispatch. Reception was not good in this area, so like all of these phone calls weren't very long before they were lost, or sometimes they just went straight to voicemail. Now, Kyle finally got a call to go through to Brandon around 1:15 a.m., where Brandon sounds really out of breath, and he told Kyle that he was bleeding. Also around this time, a police officer pulls up to Brandon's truck, but Brandon wasn't there. Now, when Kyle finally gets to the truck, Brandon was on the phone with him and said, "I see you, I'm right here." But neither the cop nor Kyle could see Brandon, and Brandon never came out of wherever he was. When this phone call with Kyle and Brandon ends, all other phone calls made to Brandon go straight to voicemail. This is even through the heebie-jeebies. So, now at this point, we should mention that Brandon has an outstanding warrant. So, what's going through Kyle's mind is that maybe Brandon isn't coming out because he's standing right next to a cop, which makes sense. So, Kyle convinces the cop to let him move his vehicle a little further up the road, hoping that that would help Brandon come out. But after moving the vehicle and staying there for about 30, 45 minutes, Brandon still doesn't come out. So now Kyle decides to leave the gas can in the truck bed and take his family home. Around 5 a.m., Kyle comes back to the truck. Brandon's still not there, and the gas is still in the gas can. And around 8 a.m., the truck is towed. So a search was done of the area, of course, around the truck, but nothing is found. Both a ground search and an aerial search is done. A thermal imaging camera is used, plane searches, cadaver dogs. All of these things were used and still nothing. Now, when I looked into the area, this area is very uneven and known to have wild hogs and rattlesnakes. So his family started a Facebook page hoping that would spread Brandon's story and that if anyone had any information, they would share it there. But they still don't have anything. I went through and looked on the Facebook page, and I think it was earlier this month, around the area that Brandon was last seen, there was a body found, but it was determined to not be Brandon. So there is still little bits of, you know, so I mean, any information that we have or you have that could help this case, or if you just want to go check out the Facebook page and see what's going on, we'll have that linked in our Facebook page. So let's get into some of the theories. The first theory is murder. So even though his 911 calls were all over the place, Brandon did mention people pushing him and pushing someone over on both sides, whatever that means. He was talking about the people who were following him, so this could have been a possibility. In some recordings of these conversations, people say that they can hear gunshots. Brandon did say he was bleeding, so that's another possibility. And another big reason is the fact that he actually did call police. So maybe that means he actually was in really big trouble, even though he was on the drugs he was.
So it's kind of what I would kind of think of in for this scenario, at least, is like where his truck was parked at. Was there houses? Was, you know, like what type of landmarks were around there? You know what I mean?
Right.
So, like, I mean, if there was, and I'm assuming if they did, you know, ground searches and used the cadaver dogs and all that, you would assume that if there was buildings or barns or sheds or whatever,
right.
that they could have picked up on that and, you know, possibly found something. But, of course, if there's not, you know, it's just flat Texas land.
Right.
That could be, it's, that's the one weird thing to me. I mean, a lot of it makes sense of, maybe he actually was, like you said, he actually called police, so he definitely could be in trouble.
Right.
But it's, yeah, I don't, these ones, you know, I know you said most people like these are ones that, like, freak me out. Because it's just like, oop, they're gone, just yeah. vanished.
Yep.
So, they're interesting to speculate about, but, like, talking about it, I'm just right. like, ooh. But
so, I mean, it's also the fact, like, that he did call police. So, that was the big right. one for me, is that even though you're on drugs and you're all over the place on phone calls, you still, like, your first thought was to call police. So, maybe he was in bigger danger than he was. Now, going back to the bleeding, when Kyle is asked, like, did you ask about the bleeding, like, anything, he thought cactus is what he thought. He thought that maybe Brandon right. had gotten into some cactus and that's what he was bleeding. He said he never really thought drastic bleeding, just kind of a little scrape here and there. So that's what Kyle thought. Of course, we just go by what Kyle says from conversations because we're not really sure. But so, second theory is that Brandon ran away. Brandon did have this outstanding warrant, so that could have led him to just run away. And if he was using drugs and he does test positive, maybe he was worried about the consequences. However, on the flip side of this, Brandon's family says that he's done jail time and he wasn't afraid to go back. So they don't agree with this theory. Brandon also withdrew from his 401k before his disappearance. But on the flip side, his last paycheck was deposited into his account the day he went missing. And that money was never taken out. But to this day, his truck keys, his phone, his wallet, like personal items like that have never been found.
So this goes back to one of the very first, like, I think it was like episode 5 that we did, the Stephen Adams case. Mm-hmm. This is starting to remind me more and more of that case the more we talk about
it. It's the same, yeah.
You know, because never found the, well, I mean, obviously they had the truck there, but never, didn't find the phone, didn't mm-hmm. find his wallet. None of the money has been touched since then.
Yep.
It's interesting that he took out all his 401k money. That's the one where I can see this going one or two ways. Number one, he was really trying to not necessarily, you know, ditch the warrants and all that and kind of start new.
Right.
But more or less, he was just trying to get a, you know, fresh start maybe somewhere else.
Right. Right.
Not necessarily, you know, ditch the, you know, skip out on warrants and all that, because, you know, like his family said, he's not afraid of jail time.
Right. Like, he's not for.
So, and that to me, so there's, it can go two different ways of, you know, maybe he had to take that money out, and this could also tie back into the first thing of, he maybe had to take that money out to pay somebody.
Oh, that's true.
Maybe. But that's kind of, if you really want me to, I can link all three of these theories together. But no, I mean, that's kind of the only way where maybe, you know, if
right.
theory one and two is tied together, that's probably your,
yep,
maybe how. But yeah, his last paycheck deposited, which kind of makes sense if it got deposited that day and then he disappeared yeah. that day. You're not going to, especially if you're trying to start off somewhere new, you're not going to touch right. that money.
Right. So, and then the last theory we have is drugs. Kyle does say multiple times in multiple different interviews that that Brandon was on meth the day he disappeared. So maybe Brandon wandered off to hide and either submitted to the elements or maybe even something drastic to an overdose situation. But before all of these theories came up, police thought Kyle could have been involved somehow in helping Brandon get away. But Kyle agreed to 2 polygraph tests. We've been over polygraph tests. Don't take polygraph tests.
Many of times.
And they don't really, you know, they don't do anything in court. But he did agree to take 2 different polygraph tests, and he passed both of them. So that's what we've got to work with.
So the kind of back to the story of where this one, I think, ties in. When
the drug theory?
Yeah. So, like, on that one where he says after 1:15, that first phone call where Kyle called him and Brandon said, "I see you. I'm right here."
Right.
That's the one that was just like, okay, is he...
Right. Are you... And then it goes to, are you really seeing Kyle, or is there somebody else that you're seeing? Maybe he wandered further down the road and is seeing somebody else, and that's when he's like, "You're right here, I see you," but yeah, it's not really him. So does he get himself into trouble a little bit further down the road, or is the drugs making him see stuff? You know, so that's what's crazy about this story, is there's so many what ifs, there's so many questions.
Yeah, and the thing to me, this kind of goes back to what I originally said of, was there houses or anything like that around where he could have been in a building looking, actually seeing them, but he was, you know, he was trying to get away, or, you know, trying to start new, quote unquote, but he didn't want to, you know, really come out of wherever he was. Or was it the, you know, third theory of he was hallucinating and just he was nowhere near where he thought he was?
Right. I mean, the fact that thermal cameras they used, I mean, obviously, you know, that's a thing because ghost hunting movies. So you like see thermal. But like, I've never heard of a case where they use that. So I read that and I was like, genius, that's so smart to do that. But the fact that they use that, they use cadaver dogs and they still don't find anything. Right. So normally I have a theory where I don't know. I mean, the fact that they found nothing around where the truck is found, even after using all of these things. So I will say, I think it's just not he went out there and died out there. I don't think it's that, because obviously they would have found something.
Right.
Even if this land is full of hogs and snakes and stuff that could have done some more damage, they definitely would have found something as soon as he's missing, as soon as they start searching. But a lot of questions in this story, so I don't know where I stand.
Well, there was another, I think they called it a missing persons one. I think Crime Junkie did it, I think. But it was a long time ago. And they talked about one where this guy was on some type of drugs. I can't remember what it was. But he was driving to somebody's house. Or he was driving from his parents' house to like college or something like that. And he left at like, you know, for example, like 8 p.m. And where he was going to school was only like, you know, 4 hours away or something like that. And like he would get, like he made it like 2 hours and then he would stop for like 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And like, I have to look, I can't remember the exact details, but basically it was just kept like he just kept stopping and like the police would come up to him. "Oh yeah, I'm fine." Da, da, da.
Right.
And like, he would just still sit there. And then I think like eventually it was like that next morning they were like, they, I guess he didn't go to class for, it was like a couple of days or something. And they were, and then they, you know, filed the police report, and it was one of those that they never found him.
Right.
So maybe that's when we can jump into for season two, because the more I think about that one, the more I was like, oh yes, that was kind of one of the first like actually true crime podcasts that I listened to. So I was like, okay.
And this is just one of them that like, I feel like with other cases, you're like, oh, well, this could have been a factor in this, could like in their personal life. The only bit of evidence or thing that could have is the warrant, this outstanding warrant is the only thing that you're kind of like, oh, that could have played a factor. So I think that's what makes this one so questionable, is because there's not even so much in his personal life that makes him like somebody who I would think that would just run away or drop everything.
Right.
So that's what makes this case questionable. But like I said, we'll have his Facebook page, that the family has started. We'll have it linked on our Facebook page, so you can go there and either keep up with the story, just get some more information, give any information if you have any. But yeah, that's episode 29. So we're going to start, we're going to talk about our sponsor for this episode, and then we'll be back with our Florida Man Minute. All right, now we're going to do our Florida Man Minute. This is where we Google a random date along with the words Florida man and sit back and giggle at the article we find.
Okay, so as always, my question for you, Sam, if you were ever in a fight and you had a weapon of choice, can't say gun, gun's the only one you can't say, what would you use?
A bat.
A bat, okay. So you'd probably lose in this fight.
Dang.
But you might have a chance. So this is from September of 2019. Headline is this: Florida man arrested after whipping out samurai sword in trash dispute.
And trash dispute.
Yep.
Love that.
So this comes from Broward County. Curtis Miller, 54, was arrested Monday on an attempted second-degree murder charge in connection with the incident, which was caught on video July 15th. Police say the victim, Todd Beavers, was out jogging when he saw the suspect perusing a bulk trash pile in the neighborhood of Oakland Park. Beavers claimed a wheelbarrow from the pile that the suspect also... Oh, so he claimed the wheelbarrow from the pile that the suspect also wanted. And that's when the two men started arguing. Mm. So they exchanged some words, but the jogger took the cart and ran behind it as he pushed the item home.
Wow.
If you can just picture that in your mind real quick, that's...
And then whips out a samurai sword.
And so the suspect finally caught up with Beavers outside his house a short time later when the home security camera captured the encounter.
Oh my gosh.
The footage shows Beavers standing at the edge of his driveway with a wheelbarrow while talking on the phone. He then notices the suspect coming toward him down the street and steps onto the sidewalk. The suspect can be seen unsheathing a samurai-style katana sword just as he enters the frame. He takes a few stuttering wind-up steps, then raises the sword behind his back and swings it with a heavy downhand swipe at the victim.
Wow.
The video shows you know, two men fighting over the wheelbarrow. The suspect swings the sword several times. Say that five times fast.
Right, yeah.
But does not appear to hit Beavers.
Well, good.
Beavers told WSVN in August, he said, when he pulled out the sword, I thought, quote, is he really going to do this?
Honestly.
That's
a wheelbarrow.
I'm going to fight you with my samurai sword. So after a brief skirmish, the suspect lets go of the wheelbarrow and backs up. The victim can be seen pointing at the security camera, which of course just captured the entire ordeal right there. So Beavers was not injured in the attack. Police initially released a video in August of 19 in hopes of identifying the sword wielding man and the woman, which there was a woman that just shows up on the video dragging the cart away.
Oh, okay.
So it was almost like it was just a distraction.
Right.
But so come to find out later on, the woman came to identify herself as the owner of that whole trash pile originally.
Oh.
So okay. I guess she said, these two...
Like, it's mine, they took it from me.
Yeah, these two goobers are dumb, and I'm taking this back. So Curtis Miller, he ends up being held without bond on unrelated charges. Beaver said, this is probably the funniest thing about it. He said, Beavers said he regrets grabbing the cart because he had no idea it would lead to such an intense dispute.
Honestly, at this point, just give it to him.
And to finish this out, he said, quote, I don't even need it. He said, I just feel really stupid about it.
Honestly, whip out the samurai sword. I will give you whatever it is you want at that point. Nothing's worth fighting when you whip out a samurai sword.
Especially a wheelbarrow is not worth it.
No, I'm not, no.
That you're getting for free. Okay, you take it, go on with your life. I'll see you later. Have a
great day. I'll check the next garbage.
Right.
Pile. Oh, good one. All right, and that's episode 29. So like always, thank you guys for listening. And thank you for your support. Make sure you follow us on social medias at Crimology Pod. You can also send us crime suggestions at our email, crimologypod@gmail.com. Next week will be our season finale, like we said. Big things with that one. And then, like I said, we'll take a 2-week break. And then we'll be back with season 2, bigger and better things. But yeah, just thank you guys. And thank you.
Canada, you're almost there. We talked about, percentages. It's probably been a few episodes ago. Challenged you to get to 10. You're still not there yet.
But close.
You're very close. You're at 8%. But no, that's something that we haven't talked about in a while. But lots of listens from
all over the
United States too. I mean,
so we see you. So we're checking the numbers daily at this point.
Yes.
And so it's just cool to see. So thank you. And like always, this is Sam.
This is Steven.
And this is Crimology.